time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today. Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Two Out the First. It's March 4th, 2024. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Thanks for being here today. We're going to talk a little bit about the weekend that was in golf. While we're recording this, it's about 9:45 in the morning on a Monday. They're still finishing up the Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches. It looks like Austin Eckroat is going to become a first-time PGA Tour winner today. He's three up right now. He's got five holes to play. But Erik van Rooyen is in the house right now at 14 under. He shot 63 that wrapped up yesterday. Unfortunately, and we'll talk about that, he was stymied quite a bit by the, what was it, like 4 hour weather delay that there was yesterday. It might have been 6 hours. I don't even know how long. It was a lot of weather delay yesterday. But we'll talk about that a little bit. We're also going to lead with, obviously, Anthony Kim and whatever impact he had on the golf conversation around the week that was for him coming back to golf for the first time in nearly 12 years. Before we get to that, we are presented by our friends at Swannies. Check them out, swannies.co. Use the promo code GolfNewsNet25 and save 25% off their first order. You're doing something, they're doing something really cool over at Swannies this year. So they're having new kind of capsule collections that launch around different concepts and different times of year. So they just came out with their new one, Boom Island. It's around summer vibes is what it's called. And all kinds of different versions of their staples. So the Logan hoodie, the Ivy hoodie, the Van Dyke hoodie, those are my favorites. The Van Dyke is kind of like a quarter zip with a hoodie on the back. They have all kinds of great flower prints in this collection, so I'm probably going to be picking up a couple of these. I actually have an anorak jacket, looks really awesome as well. And it's not the corduroy run. It's like a light blue with a deep zipper. I like it. Looks good. So check it out, swannies.co. So let's talk to Anthony Kim. All right, Anthony Kim played in his first professional golf tournament in nearly 12 years. And he did so in King Abdullah Economic City, Saudi Arabia for LIV Golf Jeddah. Jeddah and King Abdullah Economic City are about an hour apart. So the Jeddah is kind of built to be this bigger tourism draw, right? The World Wrestling Entertainment Company, which is now owned by TKO, the same folks that own the UFC, they have a long-running agreement with the Saudis to run like one or two events there per year. Two big events, and they do it in Jeddah. They're trying to do the same thing with kind of tennis, and we'll even touch on that tennis bit a little bit here later. But this is kind of meant to be one of their hubs that they're trying to draw attention and investment and ultimately tourism to. Whether it proves successful is a whole other story, and that's not the purpose of this podcast. But anyhow, Anthony Kim shows up, starts on Friday. Opens with a shank. There's a top. I mean, it wasn't good golf. And I don't think anyone should have or would have reasonably expected him to do anything other than what he did, which was not play embarrassingly bad. Like, he wouldn't have shown up. He wouldn't have signed the agreement if he were going to shoot in the mid-80s every round. That wasn't going to happen. And he also wasn't going to light the world on fire and shoot 366s and give himself a chance to win. That also wasn't going to happen. It was going to be somewhere in between that I think when I think about players kind of coming back from a layoff, not an 11-year, 12-year layoff, but when you think about that, like, all right, they haven't played in a while. They're probably rusty. They're just nervous. They're excited to be back out there. 75 is a good number. And that's pretty much what we got from Anthony Kim the entire way through. Last in the 54-player field, Matthew Wolf withdrew. So Wade Ormsby played the final round. He used the backup. But he was last by 11 against Hudson Swafford, who is the other unaffiliated player on this tour. There were only, seven players who were over par for the tournament. Obviously, Anthony Kim was the most over par. And I also do want to throw something out here that Lee Westwood and Ian Poulter, the captains of the Majestics, they were both the worst players that were out here last year. 50th and 51st, plus three, plus four. They're not playing good golf. And I'm very curious what will happen with them when their LIV Golf contract ends, because they are the captains of these teams. There's three captains of a team, right? Westwood, Poulter, and Stenson. Stenson's won an event. He has looked good at times, but Westwood and Poulter have not, pretty much at any stretch in LIV Golf, looked good. And I don't know what happens to them after this year. And we'll come back to that too a little bit later, because there's some rumor mongering out there from an unreliable Twitter account. But we'll talk about that in a bit. So Kim goes out there and shoots 76, 76, 74, 16 over par, 226. And that puts him 33 shots out of first place. Joaquin Niemann won again. He shot 63, 64, and then 66 to win the golf tournament by four shots over Louis Oosthuizen and Charles Schwartzel. Louis Oosthuizen's had a very good last 6 months, won back-to-back on the DP World Tour. He's been playing pretty well. Charles Schwartzel kind of came out of nowhere. He has not been playing particularly well, but did play well. Then you got Bryson DeChambeau, John Rahm. Those are your top five. Taylor Gooch got in. There was a big cluster at tied for sixth. And I actually did want to point something out here, because Adrian Meronk opened with 62. He was penalized a stroke in the final round for a slow play violation. In pretty much every LIV Golf event, a group featuring John Rahm has been put on the clock. Meronk was playing with John Rahm in the final round. They got put on the clock. Meronk took 2 minutes over a shot once it was his turn to hit the ball, and he was immediately penalized a shot. Kudos to LIV for enforcing slow play. I mean, at least there's that. And I think this isn't the first time this has happened. But it is kind of strange that Rahm, who is especially meticulous around the greens, is kind of cost. I mean, this cost him about $250,000, Meronk. Because if he finishes one stroke better, he's tied with Rahm. And the way the pay table works on LIV, that's a lot of money. That is not nothing. I mean, I know these guys already cashed in, but it's not nothing. $250,000 still can mean something. But Anthony Kim just wasn't there, and you shouldn't have expected him to be there. This is a longer arc. That's why they're going to give him more than three starts. That's why they're going to give him 10, because he's going to need to play his way into it. Now, you're going to know after like the third start whether this is probably going to happen or not, whether it's going to get better or it's just kind of materially going to be about the same throughout the entire season. But if it's bad for three starts, it doesn't really even matter what the next seven are, unless one of them is kind of a chance to win, because the shine will have worn off. And the folks at Shotgun Start, Brendan Porath, put it pretty well, I think. And he talked about it on their podcast a little bit about, would it have been better for Anthony Kim to have never come out of retirement? And then kind of the pushback is, well, how dare you tell someone what to do? And that's fair to say. You do what you got to do. But from a fan perspective, I think the view of Anthony Kim isn't tainted necessarily by him coming back, but it's diminished some if he comes back and just doesn't play well and it doesn't look good. And I thought it was kind of interesting, this anecdote that was kind of peddled, I think it was by Greg Norman. I did not watch the telecast when this was said, so I don't know exactly how this all came up, but this notion that Anthony Kim learned about TrackMan this week. Like, he didn't even know it existed. He didn't use one himself until this week. So he's that far behind the eight ball. And on one hand, I go, that can't be true. Unless he has not watched golf in 12 years, which that would be quite interesting. I don't think that's the case. I don't even think you could avoid golf for 12 years. Even if I walked away from this job tomorrow, I don't think I could avoid golf for 12 years. Unless I ran into a cave and didn't come out for a decade. And even then, I might still find a shot tracer somewhere. So I don't necessarily believe the anecdote, but I do believe the concept that Anthony Kim has kept himself away from the game so much to the point that he hasn't engaged in what the modern game looks like, whatever that is. In terms of ball speed, he's behind. He's behind from when he was younger. And now he's, again, almost a dozen years older. So he's going to have to train to get up to speed. He's going to have to learn how to use data to his advantage, because every other player out there is trying to do that. He's going to have to learn just how to play tournament golf again. I think that that doesn't go away from you, but you got to find it. It's like riding a bike. You will not do it for a long time, but you may not forget it, but you may not remember it. Does that make sense? This notion that you can't forget how to ride a bike. Oh, sure, I understand that. But if I took my bike out today after having not taken it out for 4 years, then I think it would take me a little while to figure out how to do things optimally again, right? Same thing with golf, same thing with anything, any skill that someone's world-class at. Once you kind of stop the obsession, once you kind of relax, things change. And that is what's going to happen here with Anthony Kim. How long that learning curve is, if it happens, that's all very much to be determined, very much to be seen. But in terms of total interest, broader interest in Anthony Kim, I don't get the sense that it was there. And I don't mean this to be a slam on Anthony Kim at all. Not whatsoever. It's not his job to generate interest in himself. It's just not. He can be him, right? The marketing machine around him that Liv has, or that his handlers have, or anything like that. Those are the people who are supposed to pump him up. It's not his job to do it. But I don't think it really meant that much to Liv. I frankly think Joaquin Neiman winning again meant more to Liv than Anthony Kim coming back. Anthony Kim is a nice publicity thing, PR stunt type of thing. Hey, look, this guy's back. And to be fair, if you would have to pick a 54th person to play on Liv for the next 10 events, this one inclusive, you wouldn't find many people better outside of like a top 10 player in the world than Anthony Kim, because there is some genuine curiosity about him. But I think that for those of us who are very online, and you probably are in the same boat if you're listening to the show, because I'm very online, so how else would you have found out about me? But if you're in that group, you probably do have some kind of nostalgia for Anthony Kim. But if you are a younger person or you're a casual golf fan, do you even remember Anthony Kim? Did he really mean that much to you if you were, you know, 10 years old when he last played? Or if you're an older person, maybe in your 50s or 60s, you know, he went 3 times on the PGA Tour. By the time he was done on the PGA Tour, he wasn't playing particularly well. Do you remember the good times? I mean, other than, you know, the 2008 Ryder Cup. I mean, that's when I think Anthony Kim. I think 2008 Ryder Cup, running with the flag, beating the crap out of Sergio Garcia. Like, that's prime Anthony Kim. That's what I think about. Other than maybe the 62, I think, at Congressional, because that's a local event to me. The round at the Masters where he made 10 birdies. Those are the three things I think about with Anthony Kim. But I don't think about dominant player. I don't think about can't miss guy. I think about really entertaining guy who had a high ceiling and a low floor. And by the end, he was getting closer to the floor than the ceiling. So here we are now, all these years later, and the romanticized version of him comes out of retirement to become the real him. And the performance just wasn't there yet. Would have expected that, but I think it would have helped had Anthony Kim and Liv come together and said, well, we need to tell the story. We need to explain the last 12 years. And I don't mean in gory detail or anything like that. Just to say, hey, here's why I walked away from the game. Oh, about that insurance policy, whatever that is. Here's what happened with that. I went and became a husband and a father, and I walked away from the game. And here's what got me to come back. Even if that the reason to come back is phony or is money. Either is fine, but just say it. And then say, here's my mission for this year. I want to try to prove that I can still play with the best in the world, that I can still contend in tournaments like these on Liv. And my goal is to earn my keep on Liv. I think that should have been done up front. That wasn't. So now you've got a guy who hasn't told a story that I don't think as many people are familiar with as everyone might think. who didn't play well, and you've got him for another 9 tournaments. When does that story get told? When do things turn around? That's the big question around him. Meanwhile, you've got Neiman, who has won now twice in 3 events on LIV. He's won 3 times overall on the LIV circuit. He has won the Australian Open. He's clearly one of the better players in the world right now. Do I know where he would rank if he got world ranking points? No, for a variety of reasons. One, LIV golf events would probably only get 20 to 24 points. So he would be struggling mightily, given the events that he won, to move up compared to PGA Tour players. He would probably find himself somewhere in the high 20s, low 20s in the world ranking, is my guess. He's probably better than that right now. I'm just trying to kind of estimate based on having 3 wins in fairly short order. But again, what does a LIV golf win mean? I'm not exactly sure. I'm still not sure. And one thing that really highlighted it for me was actually a tweet from the folks at the Ultimate Golf Ranking. Universal Golf Ranking. I want to call it Ultimate. Universal Golf Ranking. And there's, again, their system I've talked about before. It's not a good system. It doesn't really make sense with how golf is played, but they have Joaquin Neiman ranked very highly. And they also have a lot of LIV golfers ranked very highly because their system is based on head-to-head. So if you just keep beating the same crappy golfers, then you're doing great. You're beating your competition. You're awesome. But one tweet that they sent that I thought was really interesting, because they're big LIV fans, and that's why they created the system. They have they had a tweet kind of looking at the median ranking of the players, median being a very key choice there, of players in the top 10 of the Cognizant Classic and the LIV golf event in Saudi Arabia. And if you look at who finished in the top 10 of this tournament, I'll throw on top 12 because Brooks Koepka is part of that. So you would have Koepka, Gooch, Rahm, DeChambeau, and Neiman. 5 guys are clearly very good players, right? And then Dustin Johnson didn't play particularly well. Tyrrell Hatton was pretty good. Trying to go down the leaderboard here with just other players that might be of interest, but I think that's about it. And they tried to compare that to the Cognizant Classic. There's a whole bunch of nobodies playing well, and trying to make the point that the LIV golf players are contending every week. I don't think it makes the point that they think it makes, though. LIV, starting to codify what I really think about assessing a LIV golf tournament. LIV is about 10 guys right now. Used to be about like 3 or 4, and it's expanded to 10. I mean, good for them for spending the money to do it, I guess. But you've got 10 guys, basically, and every tournament is about those 10 guys. And one of those 10 guys is almost certainly going to win. And then everyone else is kind of fighting for the off chance that all 10 of those guys have enough of an off week that they can win, like a Harold Varner III winning. Or they're fighting for basically the B flight among the other 44 players in the field. And you can still make a lot of money doing that. You can still have a very lucrative professional golf life doing that. But you're not a threat to win. So Joaquin Neiman winning twice in 3 events means he beat 9 guys that matter twice. That they're very, very good players, but they're 9 guys. And if that's it, what's the point? That speaks to it right there. Versus on the PGA Tour, you've got the same, you've got a diminished star profile, right? Those 9 or 10 guys aren't on the PGA Tour anymore. So you don't have them available. But when you have these signature tournaments, like we're going to have this week for the Bay Hill event, you're going to have 42 of the world top 50. Well, you don't leave those slots blank for those 10 guys that are gone. You fill in. And that's happening on the PGA Tour every year. It's been happening every year my entire life. They just fill in. If you're not good enough, someone fills in your spot. They take it over. And that's what's happened here. But a lot of the players that are playing well this year aren't guys that were on the cusp of being top 50. They were guys that were on the cusp of being top 100 or top 150. Nick Taylor might be, he's a guy who's been playing great. He is a top 50 guy. Maybe an unexpected winner, but it's won twice in 10 months. So to me, the problem with the PGA Tour is that they don't have their name stars winning, right? LIV does, because they only have, they have 10, and they're the ones who have the best chance to win. So it works for them from a headline perspective. But if you look at it from a competitive balance standpoint, that any of these guys who have won as triple-digit shots can win tells you a little something about the depth of golf. So for LIV Golf to compete moving forward, you need those, that back end, the supposed back end. You need the players who are not quite as good, but rising. And maybe that's where an Adrian Meronk fits in, or a Anirban Lahiri fits in, or a Peter Uihlein fits in, or Abe Anser, Jason Kokrak. I mean, those are guys who have done something. They have won. They've been significant to golf. But they're not star players. So they can be replaced by Austin Eckroat, Victor Perez. I mean, name your guy at the leaderboard at the Cognizant Classic right now as they're trying to wrap this thing up. Jake Knapp, K.H. Lee, Keith Mitchell. Those are all guys who are accomplished players. They're winners on the PGA Tour. Same as the guys on LIV. There's just a lot more of them. And the difference between being great and mediocre on the PGA Tour right now, for whatever reason, seems to be very small. And on LIV, it seems to be a little bit bigger. Just depends on what you want, right? If you want the kind of headline of it, you always want a top player to win. Okay. Well, that's your product. Because there aren't that many. There's one-fifth of the field. A little bit more than a fifth of the field. About a fifth of the field. And if you want, you just want to see the depth of talent. Like, these stories wouldn't necessarily be told on a 50-person tour, right? From a viewer interest standpoint, it's brutal because ratings are down terribly. And I think collective interest in golf, regardless of tour, is down brutally. But this happens in golf. This is the point of golf. This is how it can happen. You make new stars by giving them an opportunity to succeed. And I think you would argue, and I think it'd be fair to argue, that Taylor Gooch and Joaquin Niemann, even though Niemann had won on the PGA Tour by the time he moved over to LIV, a couple times, right? But by the time that move had been made, I don't think he was solidified as a broader name, a better known name, a guy you would throw in with the top 20 players in the world. You should have, because he was going to be that. But probably not, and definitely not with Taylor Gooch yet, who found his way on LIV. I would argue it's more important for LIV to create stars than to buy stars. Does that make sense? Like, having Anthony Kim there as a sideshow, right, at least currently, as a PR piece this week, I don't think is valuable in the long haul to their prospect as it is to have Joaquin Niemann be a star that became a star at LIV. Taylor Gooch should become a star at LIV and have those guys beat the talent that they bought. I think that's a bigger deal. Personally, you got to make stars. Individual sports are about making stars. And golf has struggled to do that at the PGA Tour level, the LPGA level, DP World, every level for a long time in the shadow of Tiger Woods. And it is a long process to do it. You built up a Scottie Scheffler in 6 weeks because he won, four times. Like, all right, man, this guy's incredible. Rory McIlroy won back-to-back majors. And the first two he won were by 8 shots. You made a star because he did it. Brooks Koepka became a star because he went back-to-back in U.S. Opens and just dominated the U.S. Open and PGA Championship for 2-3 years. He became a star. John Rahm became a star because he's won 2 majors in fairly short order in his career. Again, making stars because of what they do. They got to be winners. You can't just say they're great. That doesn't work. You got to be great to earn it. And that's where we are right now, I think. So, very interesting time for all of this, of course. And then there's kind of the unsubstantiated rumor out there from the Secret Tour Pro account, which, by the way, is run just by some random dude. It's not actually a Secret Tour Pro. It's just a guy from England. But he posted, and he still keeps up this ruse that he's the Secret Tour Pro, that he is not a Secret Tour Pro. But he is connected to some pros by running their social accounts, or at least was over the years. So you kind of have to take this with a grain of salt. But the unsubstantiated rumor of the week is that there was a meeting of LIV players where the LIV folks and the PIF folks basically said they're not going to work out a deal with the PGA Tour and they're just going to focus on this. Okay, fine. I mean, it kind of feels like we were getting there anyway. If that's the case, I don't think that's earth-shattering news to anyone who's been paying attention for the last 6 months, 9 months, whatever it was. If they wanted to really do this, they'd do this. As I often tell my kids, if someone wants to do something, they'll do it. If they don't, they won't. It's pretty easy to understand. But what that might mean moving forward, more of this? I mean, for the rest of the season, you've signed all these players to contracts. So you're not changing your roster this year. You go and go spend more money next year? Yeah, I guess so. You could do that. You're going to kick out some of the guys you've signed to three-year deals because this is the third season. So they're going to be out the door. You're going to have some opportunity for turnover, I suppose. But I also don't know what's coming next from the PGA Tour side if that happens. Because if that doesn't work out, the PIF thing, and let's just say it doesn't for the argument's sake, then the money that the public investment fund might have been willing to throw at the PGA Tour, the PGA Tour is probably going to get from elsewhere. I assume that they have a backup. I assume that they have a next level investor who's ready to come in if the PIF thing doesn't work out. Because when they evaluated the proposals from Strategic Sports Group, Endeavor, all the other kind of companies that put their hat in the ring, I assume the PGA Tour did their diligence and said, okay, let's game this out. Here's who we want to be our first choice. That's Strategic Sports Group, Fenway Sports Group leading it. But if we don't work out a deal with PIF, what's that look like? Do we take on one of these other investors, potential investors, and round it out with them, or what? And you probably have arrived at what I think they did and said, okay, here's our number two. We're going to go with them as the secondary investor if that doesn't work out with the public investment fund. And that dovetails very nicely with a report from the New York Times deal book that not only did Strategic Sports Group throw their up to $3 billion into this PGA Tour Enterprises, but a variety of celebrity and high-profile people also invested. I don't think it's part of that round necessarily, but they invested. Guys like LeBron James and Chris Paul and Maverick Carter and Chris Pratt, apparently, and some others. So they've thrown some money into it as well. How many, I don't know exactly, and I don't get the sense that Dealbook knows entirely what the valuation of all that is, but there's some of that more money coming in. And I would imagine, again, that the PGA Tour has their phone tree ready to roll if this thing doesn't work out with the public investment fund. What that means is more intractable period of golf where you're going to have the Saudis flexing their influence. They're not going to necessarily be able to do it in the coming months because they've got their live golf season. But we'll see if any of this continues to gain traction. Did people watch Anthony Kim? Do people care? From what I saw from the streaming numbers, it didn't seem like it. But if you can build a star in Joaquin Neiman, maybe you've got something. If John Rahm can win sometimes, maybe you've got something. If the LIV players can win majors, you've got something, right? I mean, that's the biggest thing that LIV had going for it, or has going for it, is that they have acquired a lot of major winners, and many of them recently, because of what freedom that gives them in terms of setting their schedule and how they want to access the major championships. But Cam Smith has not been particularly good for like the last year, right? So some work, some don't. Brooks Koepka was kind of a guy who signed because he thought his career was close to over. Well, that's not so true anymore. Turns out he's still got a lot of game left. Dustin Johnson was a dominant signing that wasn't good. Now seems to be good again. I really don't know where all of this leads, and anyone pretending to could have never seen the last couple of years coming, I don't think. Not all the twists and turns. Maybe some facets of it, but not all the twists and turns. So we'll just kind of have to see what happens next and go from there, I guess. But we have two events this week on the PGA Tour. We've got the Arnold Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill. We've got the Puerto Rico Open. We've got on the DP World Tour, the Johnson Workwear Open, which is co-sanctioned with the Sunshine Tour. We've got the LPGA in China for the Blue Bay LPGA, which I don't know this exactly. I'm pretty sure it's the last year for this event. It's been one that's often been canceled or moved about. So I think this is going to be probably the last year for that tournament, but it's being played this week. And LIV, I think this week is in Hong Kong, if I remember right. So, you know, another week where, for an American audience, not the best timing. But, you know, it's a, 11-hour difference, I think, between the time zones. So it's going to be tricky for anyone to watch that. But anyhow, full week, full slate this week. I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about, especially if this stuff kind of pans out that gets confirmed around the rumor mongering about a lack of a deal between the Saudis and the PGA Tour. And yeah, another week in the life of whatever the heck we're living through. Get a hold of me, Ryan, at thegolfnewsnet.com. Check me out on Twitter, Threads, X, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Ryan Ballingy. I'm on YouTube and Facebook at Ryan Ballingy Golf. Thanks so much for your support of the show. We'll be back tomorrow here on Two Off the First.
Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered, like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches, but there aren't, right?
Right, because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.